Pope Benedict is urging world leaders attending the G20 summit in London to maintain development aid for poor countries, despite the global economic crisis. The Pope wrote to the British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, asking that he and the other G20 leaders don't forget the world's poor as they try to chart a way out of the crisis. In his letter, Pope Benedict recalled his recent visit to Africa and said the poor are going to be the greatest victims of the crisis, yet bear no responsibility for it. He also called for a return to ethics in finance and said the measures proposed by the G20 to rein in the crisis must offer security to families and stability to workers. In his reply to the Pope, Brown said that one of his top priorities for the summit was protecting the poor and ensuring wealthy countries keep their promises on development aid. In the run-up to the G20 summit in London, Caritas Internationalis issued a statement calling on the world leaders to put the poor at the heart of a reform package that will build a new low-carbon economy based on justice and equality. Caritas said ethics need to be put back into the economy and urged the G20 leaders not to be content with patching up what it called the failed globalisation of greed. Patrick Nicholson is the head of communications at Caritas, and he told me why a radical reform of the current global financial system is urgently needed.
Caritas thinks that G20 really needs to restructure the global economy. There's no point in just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. What we really need to think about is why we're in this crisis at the moment. And for Caritas, it's because we had a globalization that was based on greed and the pursuit of wealth by the few, and not a globalization of solidarity, a globalization which was working towards creating wealth for all of humanity and improving the lot of everybody. So we really need to use this crisis as an opportunity to see how we can restructure globalization to make it work for us all and not just the powerful few. And that really should be top of the agenda for the G20.
But how easy is it going to be, though, to agree on a reformed alternative system? Because here we've got so many different nations, each of them going to have their own ideas.
I don't think they have a choice, really. I think it's clear to everybody that the current status quo is no longer workable. So I think world leaders, people going to the G20 conference, really need to think hard and long about how they can work together and how they can produce coordinated policies which will readdress the system. I think you're right, there are lots of competing countries and competing needs, but we are one humanity, and the majority of humanity has been excluded from globalization. They're the have-nots, and so we really need to see the developing countries and developed countries work together to produce the sorts of policies that are required. Things like the World Bank and the IMF at the moment are run by rich countries, and what we need to see is poor countries have a say in how they're run and have a say in how the architecture, if you like, of globalization is governed.
In fact, there's already been many of the up-and-coming countries like China, India and Brazil that have been flexing their muscles and plainly want more say in the running of the global financial system. So do you think we're going to see quite a strong push on their part?
I hope so. I think it's not just emerging economies such as China and India and Brazil, but it's also poor countries which need a say too. The least developed countries in sub-Saharan Africa or Latin America or Asia, which have been excluded up to this point. And many of the policies are ones which affect their country, so not to give them a say in how globalization works or how countries are bailed out is not democratic, and it's also not very effective, because we all know that if people can decide their own policies, then they're more likely to work than ones that are imposed on them from outside. And, you know, that's what happened in the 1990s and failed. And so we shouldn't really repeat those mistakes of the past. There comes a time.
when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one.
Do you agree then with those, well, there are many, you know, civil society and church activists that in fact see almost a golden opportunity as a result of this crisis, you know, this opportunity, as you said, to press for really radical reforms to create a more equitable, ethical and transparent system, so in a sense good can come out of bad?
I think we can either meet this crisis with paralysis and do nothing mentality, or we can say, you know, let's patch up the boat and get it back on its feet and carry on as we were before, or we can really see it as an opportunity to create a globalization based on solidarity, justice and peace. And for the poor, who've been the least responsible for the economic crisis, but who are going to pay the biggest price, that's really what we need to see happen. It's completely scandalous that we're seeing trillions of dollars raised in hours to rescue the banking crisis, whereas at the same time, rich countries are cutting their aid budgets, and that cannot carry on. And on climate change, again, we can't allow rich countries to dodge the fact that we need to see dramatic cuts. We need to see a good agreement on climate change in a meeting in Copenhagen in December. And we need to see extra aid, extra financing to help poor countries cope with the impact of climate change. Whereas we could bail out the banks, we're not going to be able to bail out the climate if we make decisions that are too late.
There is, though, a lot of, shall we say, public awareness, as you say, of the greed and all that was wrong with the current financial system. You know, there's been this very considerable anger against, for instance, the huge bonuses paid to executives of companies that required government help to be bailed out. And we saw earlier the row over the bonuses paid to the leading staff at the American insurance giant AIG. Do you think this has perhaps helped ordinary people to see this greed that was displayed by the rich and powerful, and perhaps help make people more aware and less selfish and greedy in the future?
I hope so. I think the old system based on creating large amounts of debt, on consumerism, was just not sustainable, not just for the rich, but for middle-class people in Europe and North America too, and elsewhere around the world. That idea that you can have an economy that is based on consumer spending, money which the consumer doesn't have, money on credit, is just not either something that we want or something that is sustainable in the long term. So I hope not just the rich and powerful, but everybody takes a look back at how they live their lives and whether they can live their lives in a much more sustainable, eco-friendly way where consumerism isn't at the center of their existence, and really look at ways where on an individual level we can improve the world that we live in and also cut back on our rampant consumerism. And that's really the only way that we're going to tackle some of these big issues, is that the individual person decides to change their life and persuades other people to follow in that example. We all bear responsibility for this crisis, the situation that we're in, and because of the lives that we've led, and we really need to think about that and change our approach.
I see that Caritas is calling, in fact, for a new international system for wealth distribution, and you're also calling for measures to be taken to tackle tax evasion, the issue of tax havens. Can you tell us a little bit more about your proposals on these matters?
In terms of redistribution, I mean, there are clever tax schemes where we can change the way that money is distributed. So, for example, the taxes on aeroplane travel or fuel taxes, that money that we can tax these things and put that money back into climate change mitigation or into development. Clever schemes which hopefully would cut air travel, something that we need to do, and do that by putting money into climate mitigation and into aid. Tax evasion, I mean, it's one of those things that people don't talk about enough. Huge sums of money are lost because of tax evasion and illicit capital flows. 350 billion to 500 billion is lost by poor countries alone. And we really need to see a crackdown on tax evasion and tax havens. So sanctions against countries which offer those tax havens and sanctions against businesses which use them, and a code of conduct that is adopted at an international level through the UN which fights tax evasion. I think at the moment there's a lack of transparency with what companies pay governments to operate in their countries. Say, for example, oil companies don't have to publish what they pay governments to operate. So, you know, that creates bad governance, and that can create the problems that we've seen in Africa, where you've had resource-led conflicts. And if we know what companies are paying governments, and we know how to hold those governments to account, I mean, it's not just rich countries, it's also poor countries, to improving their governance. So if we can hold them to account, hold their budgets to account, then we can move forward. I mean, one of the our partners in Tanzania and Zambia, one of the things that they do is they record the cost of living, and they record what governments are spending on health and education and their budgets, and they challenge them and they hold them to book. And they can only do that because of the huge effort that Caritas at international level and other NGOs have put into creating civil society and creating the kind of mechanisms in those countries where governments can be held to account.
You said earlier that, of course, this economic crisis will impact on poor people the most, but do you think the worst there is still to come?
I have no doubt that it's going to be much worse for developing countries. I mean, we've already seen some of the impact with the food riots that we had last year, really across the world. So we're really seeing, you know, a large number of people now who can't afford enough food to eat. 150 million people now more have been driven into poverty. There is a sort of sense of we've stepped over the cliff, and at the moment we're kind of hovering in the middle of air, like a sort of cartoon character waiting to plummet. But I think in developing countries, we're already seeing that plummet. You know, the commodity prices have gone way down. So if you look at countries like Zambia, for example, which produces copper prices have really plummeted, and the government in Zambia doesn't have as much income from exports, which means it can't spend as much on health and education. And, you know, where there is no safety net in a poor country, where you don't have a national health service, the poor people are directly being impacted by that today. I think that's clear.
I was speaking to Patrick Nicholson of Caritas Internationalis.
God's great big family and the truth.